Hey guys, and welcome to the first ever episode of Dua Lipa at Your Service. It's a new podcast series that I've been dreaming of and planning for quite some time now. I can't believe it's finally here. I'm quite nervous, but I'm so excited for you all to hear what's in store. Let's get into it. Over the next few months, I'll be sitting down with some of the world's most inspiring minds to help give you a look under the hood of what makes them all tick, including today's guest, the incomparable fashion mogul, Olivier Rousteing. During our chat, we'll be getting quite personal, we'll be getting deep, we'll be having a laugh at the same time, not taking ourselves too seriously. We're trying to be as much of an open book as possible. And what's quickly become my personal favorite part of the podcast is going through my guest lists of tips and recommendations. Some of the lists that I've been given from my wonderful guests on the show are lists like the most exciting young London designers to look out for, the best West Village restaurants you need to try the next time you're in New York. And that just gets me really excited because it just means that my personal lists grow and we can do that together. What I'm absolutely loving about making At Your Service and doing this podcast is really just how intimate it feels. I mean, right now, for instance, I'm speaking to you from my apartment in New York, sat at my kitchen table. We're not recording in a fancy studio. It's just me, a microphone, and my laptop. And it's great because I can just feel like I can set it up anywhere I am in the world and I can talk to you guys. So this is really exciting for me. And wherever you're listening in the world, I'd love to hear from you. You know, what do you think about what you're hearing? What can I improve on? What's inspired you from our conversations? Like, I'd love to know everything. And so at the end of the episode, I'll give you the details on how to get in touch with us because I really, really do want to hear from you. The way I hope At Your Service is of service for you, I hope you can become of service for me and the podcast as well. So without further ado, here's At Your Service with our first and very, very, very special guest, the creative director of the French fashion house Balmain, Olivier Rousteing, who spoke to me from his studio in Paris. Hello.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm so good. Now that you're here, so nice to meet you. Well, we've met before, but nice to like see you again.
Yeah, I know. I think we saw just once when you were in Paris for the Quotidien.
Yes, exactly. I actually just recently, I just found that picture again. It's so crazy. It feels like such a long time, but then so many things have happened and it also feels like yesterday.
A year feels like yesterday, a day.
I know, you know. Time is flying.
You're doing so well, Dua. I'm so, so happy to have you because you know, you've been an inspiration for so many years here and bravo for everything that you're doing, honestly.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. I'm so like inspired by you and your journey and everything that you've been through and just the person that you are is really inspiring to me.
Thank you so much.
And I want to start really by saying that many people would really describe Balmain as maximalist, flamboyant, like glamorous. We know lots of hip-hop artists drop Balmain in their songs. How far and how much do you think this like reflects the vision for the brand?
I think you're completely right about Balmain is flamboyant, is maximalism, and it's super French. Because France is maybe sometimes known for being super minimalistic, you know, like your denim blue pair of pants with your t-shirt and, you know, a flat shoe. But, you know, France is as well Versailles. Paris is about Versailles. There is La Concorde. There is the Eiffel Tower that touched the sky. So I think there are different kinds of France. And mine always been like my obsession of la, what we call in French, la grandeur française, which is all about, you know, like sky is the limit. So this is the beauty of Paris. This is the beauty of my country. And I always dream big, and as you, you know. So I mean, I always make my collection really rich with a lot of couture. And it's part of the house because the house has been built in 1945. So it's a house after the Second War. And Pierre Balmain, the creator of the company of the house, was the one that was dreaming big. So I keep trying to keep the, I would say, the heritage and the tradition of the house. And I think Balmain is a big laboratory where we try all the techniques. And I love that the girls or the boy, whether they dress barman, they feel really unique. It feels something really confident, powerful, and unique. So this is something that I want to keep in my mind every time I'm sketching.
Yeah, I think immediately when you see something, you know it's Balmer. You know, it has a very distinct vision. And I think what's incredible is you were also appointed creative director at just the age of 25.
Yes.
And the brand has been around since 1945. So like, what pressures did you feel taking on this, like the legacy of this fashion brand forward? I know you said that, you know, the heritage of it is so important, but what was that like being only 25? What did you feel at that point?
You know what? This question is super important in my life because when you say that I got the job at 25 and I studied at Balmain at 24. I was a real little baby. Mm. And you know, in fashion and in France, there were not so many young designers at the time. So, and you know, maybe in America, when you're young, it feels like you can, you know, the king of the world and a dream come true. But in France, when you're young, sometimes it's a weakness at the time because they feel like it's all about experience. So I remember when I started to get appointed, I mean, I was really like a baby in fashion. I had all my interns that were actually older than me. Mm-hmm. So it felt really weird, you know? And there was another thing that today people mention, but you know, at the time they didn't mention, I was the first French black designer in a luxury world. So, and that was 10 years ago. So there were two things that were difficult in a sense that because there was a lot of racism in the fashion industry at the time, sometime in the company at the time as well. So I had to face, you know, like that feeling of trying harder than others because they didn't believe in me at the time for many people that were in the industry and my age as well, because they were like, oh, let's see what that kid will do tomorrow. And let's see if it's just, you know, a fireworks and tomorrow it's over. And so it was a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. And there was another thing, you know, I believed in social media when I was young. I still believe it. You know, the word inclusivity was a word that, and is a word that is super important for me. But at the time, you know, sometimes the fashion industry, they were not understanding what I was trying to say. Because for them, you know, there were like those three words, which is like modern, chic, and cool. And they didn't, you know, sometimes I don't think they understand that inclusivity is beyond those three words. So already that topic was something that I had to fight for many, many years. And the lack of diversity in fashion, of course. And that was something that I was really loud about since the beginning. And you know, thank God, like now people is talking about it, but 10 years ago, it was not the same thing. Yeah. You know?
Do you feel like, especially, you know, racism in the workplace and the understanding and acceptance of you being the first black creative director at a major fashion house, do you feel like some of that racism was like steeped in snobbery?
You know, I think for many people, luxury was defined by color, by skin tone. And this is unfortunate, but this was a reality in the mind of many snobbish and people that could control fashion at the time. And even when you go into the studios, you know, because now we are talking about me as a creative director, but at the time, you know, there were not so many foreigners in studios and in Paris, you know, there were really this kind of feeling of, for them, luxury means one thing. And this is something that I didn't grow up with that image of what is luxury, you know? And and sometimes people think that luxury needs to always have this idea of, I would say, a door closed, you know? They don't want to open the doors and they want to be exclusive.
This kind of exclusivity.
Yeah,
right.
Exclusivity sometimes means luxury for many people. This is something that I don't believe in, you know? Because of my generation, because I'm adopted, and so my parents grown with another kind of vision of the world. But you're right, like I think, and above all in Paris, which sometimes it's really, I don't know, hypocrite?
Hypocrite. That was good. Hypocrite.
You know, exactly. they don't want to mention it, and they say, no, it's, you know, it's fine. There's no racism in the country. There is no racism in fashion. And you're like, guys,
that's the
come
problem.
On. Yeah. Already when you say that, there is a problem. Yeah. So of course, you know, I think I had to face that. But I have to face more the mentality. It's what you say, because when they feel like luxury means one thing and you cannot be part of it, that was the struggle.
We'll be right back after this short break. I'd love to talk to you about your start in life. You were in an orphanage up until you were about 8 months old, and then you were adopted by a lovely white French couple. And you've been on a quest to make sense of your past, which was also a really powerful subject in your documentary Wonder Boy, which was really incredibly moving for me when I watched it. And it came out last year. And, you know, you've spoken quite openly about how you've felt navigating life as one who has never really known his parents. And I'd love to know, like, what was it that made you not only want to go on this search, but also do it so publicly?
Yeah, I think it was really intense part of my life because, you know, there is that thing when people is thinking that when you get the truth, it feels liberating. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that I needed to feel freedom again when I knew my truth, when I knew where I come from. You know, I grown up for 30 years without knowing where I come from, you know. Why is my skin color coming from? Where are my parents come from? And what was the reason why they didn't want to keep me, you know, as a child? So I think all of those questions were haunting me. And so one day I decided to go through the research. And in a weird way, you know, the weirdest question is like, why do you do front of cameras, you know? To be honest, I mean, it was not supposed to be like that. But at one point, I realized that this was a research that I needed to do for my future. Mm-hmm. Because there were a lack of loving myself, you know. I couldn't love myself and for many reasons. So I wanted to have those answers. Above all, because I've grown up, I have a great career. And I was like, now it's time for me to know where I come from. So we started this long journey of 2 years looking for the answers. And I decided as well, because I was like, you know what, I want to do for as well all the people that loves me, that's supporting me, the followers that I have and the people that sees me, you know, as a designer that bring a strong message. I was like, you know, I come from an orphanage. If I can make it happen, no matter where you're coming from, just believe in what you are and you can go anywhere that you want. So I think it was more for giving a strong message to the world, to the fashion industry as well, to stop cliches and not believing that sometimes it's your background that defines who you're going to be.
Absolutely.
So I decided this journey. I always say I knew the beginning, but I didn't know the end because it was all in a way live. You know, I didn't know what would be the answers. Sometimes I wanted to step back and they were like, no, you cannot step back. And I was like, no, you're right. I don't want to step back, but it was easy to sometimes step back. Mm-hmm. So through my collection, I was discovering answers. So the beautiful part of it is that I discovered that my dad was Ethiopian and my mom was Somalian. And so I am, and I was super proud. But what was hurting me was the fact that she was 14 years old and maybe not consentent, which kind of, you know, you wake up one day and you realize that maybe, you know, you might love your mother, but you might hate this man. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, really tough for myself to discover those answers. So it was weird and it was sad. Because it's bringing a lot of question, you know, about the condition of women, bringing question about adoption or abortment, you know, like she was not maybe allowed to abort, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a really long and intense journey. But at the end of the day, you know, I cannot be more than thankful and to my adoptive parents that love me and give me so much love and values. Mm-hmm. And this is the most important. And I think the end of this story is more like, no matter where you come from, fight to go where you want to go.
Absolutely. I found your like strength and your vulnerability really powerful when I was watching it, for somebody who's in the public eye at such a grand scale, to really put yourself out there to show your, you know, your insecurities, the things that push you, the things that make you want to be who you are, the, you know, your understanding of your cultural identity, of the color of your skin. It was very emotional and very, very empowering for me. I thought your story was incredibly moving, and I think it's also so important for people to watch the documentary, especially people who have been through a similar situation like you, to also see that no matter what, no matter where you're from, no matter your background, no matter what you're doing, that you always have the opportunity to go deeper, to find answers about yourself. And I think it's really, really, really strong of you. And so I thank you on behalf of so many people. I think that you've probably changed so many lives and given them such a perspective. And, you know, also understanding your background being Somali and Ethiopian, what impact did that have, you know, on your sense of identity. And I feel like it also, it inspired your 2022, like, resort collection as well, you know?
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think that's really, that's great. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about that.
I think it inspired me in two ways, personally and in my collections.
Mm-hmm.
In my collections, because, you know, when you discover your origins, I mean, I've always been someone really curious, but all my incredible origins helped me to, you know, look at the prints, look at the culture, getting closer to the culture. I always been in love with North Africa and Africa. And of course, now that I know that I'm part from the culture and the country, mm-hmm. and completely part of the country, because, you know, when you don't know your origins, you might think, you know, I'm half French, half African. Actually, I'm totally African, born in France. So it's such a strong has such a strong impact on my vision for my own collection. So it helped me to create, and as well, maybe finding the answers gave me a strength on being confident, because I don't know how you feel, but sometimes, you know, social media, you bring, like, sometimes an image of yourself of always being happy, always, like, pretending, you know. And the fact that I've been really honest with myself through the Wonder Boy and discover who I am, and sometimes showing my, as you say, my vulnerability, today gave me more strength, because I'm more myself and I feel like I don't have to hide my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that together made me a designer today that I feel stronger. You know, Kurt Cobain says something that I always say, it's really important. He say, I would rather to be hated for who I am than being loved for who I'm not.
Yeah.
And sometimes it might sound super cheesy, but I can tell you, sometimes I try to follow, you know, some traditions that fashion teaches you to be or to do, where after discovering where I come from, discovering all my background, you know, I was like, you know, this is who I am. And that's going to help many people in the different generations.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel proud, super, super proud. And that's given me so much strength today. And this is what is the most important.
I love that. It's really interesting, because social media in so many ways can be so incredibly powerful. It can be good for so many things. But at the same time, it also makes us portray this kind of idea or this vision of what we are, whereas we really only show our best days, you know. It's definitely one of those things where you kind of put up, like, your best days when things are going well, you know, things that you want to show people. But so very rarely do we really open up and be vulnerable and really show our true selves. So I think having had the opportunity to do that is so freeing.
Yeah, it feels so freeing.
And
sure.
I know that last year you revealed on Instagram the horrific injuries that actually happened to you during the terrible explosion in your apartment.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through what happened there?
I was just with my friend and I had a big fireplace in my house and it exploded completely. Oh, so it burned my face and it burned half of my body. So yeah, it was a lot, because I just woke up the morning after and I didn't know where I was, because I didn't realize much what happened, you know, through the night. So I went to the hospital and they gave me tons of medicines. So I got burned half of my body and my face, and it was second degree. So it took time to heal, like, for at least it took like a year. Now I feel much better.
Mm.
But at that time, you know, I didn't know what happened. To tell you the story, the fireplace exploded and my skin was fine. I just got really warm. It was hot. So I go and take a shower. I just felt like, you know, a sunburn, something really nothing special. But the day after, I mean, and actually an hour after, I called the emergency because my skin was like red. And I could see that there was something happening. And at this point, like, the emergency came, they brought me to the hospital, and there I was fully red, but after I start to lose my skin. So they put me on treatment, sleeping pill, like painkillers, and I fell asleep for a night. I woke up around like 8 a.m., full of bandages all around my face, all around my body, and they told me, you have been burned. And I have to thank God for my families and my friends, because I had to be in the hospital for 2 months, going back and forth, taking the shower, you know, like all the nurses, like, showering you. All the drops of water felt like torture, because, you know, when you don't have skin, it's already like like the water becomes a huge torture. Yeah. At the same time, I discovered incredible people that were so nice with me, all the nurses, my doctors, and I was crying obviously every day. Do you know, the first week was, I didn't cry much because the pain was so strong that I was like, I'm not going to cry. You know, after maybe 3 weeks, you realize that the pain is starting to go, to fade away. But after, it's the aesthetic part that starts to become the second question, because, you know, there were no mirrors in the hospital. And so, I was full on bandages. I was taking off the bandage only in the hospital. So I would never see my skin underneath, you know, I would never see the skin underneath. So I never knew how I was looking like, you know? And yeah, and after, like, I realized when they told me, now you can go home, and of course my house is full of mirrors. Maybe this is my karma. but at that point I realized, you know, and so I was just like trying to hide their turtlenecks, like I had gloves. I mean, and no one saw it. And it was COVID time, which in a weird way, you know, helped me to hide. And that no one could see me for a year. And so, yeah, I had to heal in private. And there again, you're right about social media, because you can pretend on social media whatever you want. Like, no one would ever know that I had an accident and I was burned. You know, you can play with some picture from the time, from like 2 years ago. You can hide and put a bum and monogram, you know, whatever. And people feel like, okay, he likes his monogram and his turtleneck. But at the end, I was hiding lot of scars. And one day I cried a lot, and my doctor called me and he's like, I was in the hospital and my doctor told me, why are you crying? I'm like, because I felt like I was a superhero. And actually I feel so weak now that I'm not anymore a superhero. And his answer was beautiful. He said, I don't believe in a superhero that has no scars. And there I started to wake up and I was like, you know what? He's right. I'm not going to be a superhero, but at least I'm going to try to be a hero in my own little bubble world. And my scar is going to be my strength. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, at the same time, I'm telling you that I feel really humble because I heal so well and I feel free. But in a weird way, I feel more alive today than 2 years ago, because after my accident and after going through so much pain, I realized that, you know, there's always this famous sentence, which is, let's do it tomorrow. Mm. But when it happened, this accident, I'm like, fuck off. Like, I'm going to live my life like right now. And absolutely, there is no tomorrow. Everything that I need, that I want to say, I want to do it now, because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. So who people that I love, I say, I love you. Who people that I say, you're not good for my life, you're toxic, I say, you're toxic, go away. Yeah. You know what? I feel I live life full on, you know, and this is what my accident helped me more than I think. And again, it has been terrible, but every time after the storm, there is the sun.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so, this whole conversation has given me so much insight and made me really reflect really about life in general, because it's true, you know, all our experiences, everything that we go through really helps us, build us up to help us become the people that we are meant to be. Eventually, you know, in life, we all grow through our experiences. Yeah. There's a saying in Albanian, which is actually, when I translate it in English, it's like, never leave today's work for tomorrow. Exactly. So whatever it is, always do it. And I live by that every day, where I'm just like, well, if I have to do it, it's going to have to happen today. And I think it's, yeah, you're a very inspiring person. So thank you for all of this and for your beautiful insight and for sharing your experiences. I've read so many interviews and I know how relentless and how hard you work, and you go into the office on Saturdays and Sundays because you think those are your most creative days.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you work very intensely, and I can see myself there as well. I see my job as like a 24-hour job,
you
nonstop
work so
on.
Hard.
I'm always doing something. Yeah. And I think when I was reading your interviews, I saw so much of myself as well in your words. And I'd love to know what compels you to work so intensely.
I feel lucky to have a job that I love. To wake up in the morning and whatever the pressure is, I feel blessed. And again, you know, I feel like it's just the beginning. Maybe every day feels to me a beginning. So in a weird way, you know, it's been 10 years. When I celebrate my 10 years, I was like, already 10 years. But I live my day like if it was my first day at Bauman every time, because I have so many things that excite me, so many collaborations, so many challenges. And every fashion show for me feels different. People from my team is my family. And I can see even you, like when you work with people, there are people that you trust, that you feel good with. So it's not anymore people that you only work. It's like you're part of your new family, you know, because my family is far. So I build like a family with my team, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel lucky, and this is going to give me strength for the rest of my life to have people surrounding me that I love and I don't want to disappoint them. And I work with beauty all day, you know, like my work is to create beauty and dreaming and make dream people, you know. So at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not saving lives, you know, in a weird way. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and going to hospitals, you know, I'm creating beauty all day. So I shouldn't complain ever. And I keep my smile. The day that I don't smile anymore, it's the day that I will not work anymore at Balmain, or I will not work anymore in fashion, because waking up with a smile is the most beautiful thing that can happen to life. Whatever is your lover, whatever is your work, keep your smile. And this, for now, I have.
Yeah, I say kind of a similar thing. Is for as long as I have butterflies and my job excites me and going on stage scares me, and I'm still just like nervous and excited and about doing all those things, that I'm still in the right place. The second I don't have those feelings anymore, then it's probably time to move on.
Yeah.
We got to keep that fire alive.
Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break. And while we're away, why don't you take a moment to go to service95.com and subscribe to our Service 95 newsletter. Our debut issue is out now and features some incredible stories by some of my favorite writers from around the world. A new issue of Service 95 will hit your inbox every Thursday, and I don't think you'll want to miss a second of what we've been working on. So subscribe now at service95.com. We'll be right back with Olivia Roustang, creative director of Balmain, after this short break. So last October, you celebrated your 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Congratulations. it's a major milestone, and you did it with an extraordinary Balmain festival.
Yeah.
And so many of your incredible friends were involved, from Beyonce to Naomi Campbell. I mean, yeah, it's just like icon on icon on icon. It's just like, how do you top that?
I don't know.
You know, with your next collection coming, I believe, in Paris in a few weeks.
What
can we expect? I read in Wall Street Journal, you said you don't believe in 10-year plans. So there's got to be something. What is your plan next?
I think this next show is going to be based on something that all you, I, our generation is going through. And it's not about the COVID, even if that's something that we all go through. Mm-hmm. But it's a topic that I think will be really important for me to bring in the fashion world, and as a strong message. So, and I think there's an incredible artist that's going to be part of it, that has always fought for that. It's someone that I'm sure is really inspiring to you as much as inspiring to me. It's someone from your world, let's say, that from the music world. So let's see if it's all going well, and if with the world, like, you know, with the COVID, if there is no problem about having an audience and having this person with us. But we're going to create something really special. And I hope you're going to like it, actually, because
it's
a topic that I'm sure you might, like, we all feel really touched by, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm very, very excited, and I'm very much looking forward to that. I love how passionate you are about Paris and your home, and, you know, how connected you are to also the heritage of the brand. And I think for our listeners, and then also for our readers on Service 95, I have like a couple lists that I'd love to ask you for, which I normally do at the end of these interviews. And my first one, which I'm very excited about, is, what are your five favorite things to do on a day off in Paris?
Okay, on a day off in Paris, my five favorite things. So I'm going to do my Emily in Paris now.
Yes, give me the Emily in Paris.
One thing that I love in the morning, it might sound cheesy, it's working around La Seine, like the tower, because I love that, and going under the bridge because there is no one. And as someone that wakes up around 6 a.m., So I usually, like, when I go out from my house, there is no one, and I love walking under the bridge.
Nice. That must be so
really
peaceful.
Nice, really chill. I love going to a restaurant. I love a restaurant that is an Argentinian restaurant called Anahí, which is in the small streets. You know Anahí?
I've heard of it. It's on actually one of my lists in Paris of places I need to go. I would love to try it sometime.
I will
so that's
bring
so
you
good
there.
That you love that.
After, you know, other things that I love, it's all the exhibitions. Like I love going to Musée Galliera, which is one of the incredible museum where, you know, the last one that I've seen was Alaïa exhibition. Mm. And I love going to see other brands as well, exhibition, and seeing how incredible it is, what people have done and all the inspiration, and see the clothes in real. There is one thing that I would love to bring you is actually I don't know if you like markets where, you know, it's old pieces, you know, from furniture or vintage.
Markets.
Okay,
yes.
Saint-Ouen.
Okay.
Like we call that in French, les puces de Saint-Ouen. And usually I go super early on Sunday and I just stay for like 5 hours, you know, seeing like incredible furnitures. Like last day I bought like a lamps from Coco Chanel. Like, it's incredible. You have incredible things. Sometimes super expensive, sometimes super cheap, but super beautiful.
Oh, amazing.
And I love vintage clothes or vintage furnitures. So.
And you can find them there.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. That's so cool.
And when I have more time, I love to go outside and Fontainebleau, and I'm horse riding, and I love horse riding.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah.
So I go outside from Paris with my car, and I go to horse ride with my friend. Yeah.
Wow, I love that.
Do you horse ride?
Well, I've done it a couple of times. I'm not very good at it, but I think I can get on a horse and ride.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do
that
it together.
That sounds good. And for my second list, I also read that you have a very specific breakfast routine.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know what your three favorite breakfast spots are in Paris.
I love Hotel Coste.
Okay.
Hotel Coste, because I love, you know, the feeling of like, I love the eggs that they have and the avocado toast. I think this is so good. There's another place that I love as well, is going to close to my gym, Le Clay, because they do a really healthy breakfast where it's like all about really fresh fruits, and they have incredible, again, avocados. I'm obsessed with avocados.
Love avocados?
But you know how I discover avocado? I always loved it, but because of my skin, because when I start to understand the routine to heal better, like they told me avocado is really great. So I got like, that's why I start to get like so many avocados. I was just like putting on my face, eating them, like just like crazy. But no, I have been really tough on my routine to heal better. But my favorite breakfast is in my house, because I do like my scrambled eggs. I get like all my fresh orange juice. I have an entire fridge with incredible fresh fruits. I'm really disciplined on that, you know. And that's it. You know, I'm not really
so
difficult.
Good.
And a lot of vitamin D and vitamin C. That's what I do. But in my house, basically.
Okay, so now we know the secrets to your amazing skin as well, it seems.
I tell you, just getting so much fruits all day and hydrating a lot, drinking so much water. But I'm not going to do that with you, because your skin is flawless, my dear.
Stop.
So you should give us your routine.
I'll give you my routine. I promise.
Okay. Now, come on.
Now?
Yeah.
I really drink a lot of water.
Okay.
I take vitamins. I take omega-3. I use that brand, Biologique.
Yeah, what?
So I use that one. That one's really good for my skin. And I don't really eat after 6 p.m. Like, I fast. And I feel like my skin really, it helps my skin doing that. I think when I eat really late, then my body doesn't really like work through, like it takes too long trying to process food or whatever, and then it doesn't repair other things in my body.
That's why. Mm. But I mean, it's genetic as well, my dear, because...
I don't know, but not all the time. I'm not that strict on it, but when I do, that's kind of what I do. Olivia, thank you so, so much for your time. I've absolutely enjoyed talking to you, getting to know you. Thank you so much for your service, for everything that you do, for your honesty, your vulnerability, your strength. It's really empowering. So thank you. And I think our listeners are really, really going to enjoy listening to this. I think it's going to be a very special episode. So thank you for your time, from the bottom of my heart. And can't wait to see you in Paris.
My God, me too.
We've got lots of things planned.
Yes.
So,
I mean, if I might add something,
of course,
I feel really honored to have this podcast with you, because you've always been an inspiration from day one. You're someone that I love as a music, as a talent, as beauty, and as challenging the industry that you're working in, inspiring all my industry, and I feel more than proud. And again, for many people that don't know, but you've been always a big supportive of Bauman in many ways, and thank you.
Thank you for
letting me today being part of this podcast with you. It's a real honor.
Oh, thank you so much.
Mwah. Bisous.
Bisous. Thanks so much to Olivier for a wonderful conversation. I'm really grateful. He was so open and so vulnerable, and I'm going to take a lot away from this chat with him. Okay, so like I said earlier, all of you are the most important part of this podcast. It's nice to know who's out there, where you're listening to us from, and what you're thinking about our conversations. So please send us a voice note to podcast@service95.com. That's 95 in numbers, with your feedback, your questions, your additions, your notes. I'd love your criticism. Tell me so I can make it better. Maybe we'll play it during an upcoming episode. And remember, please, just to tell us your first name and where in the world you are. Since Olivier told us all his favourite things to do in Paris on a day off, I'm wondering what our Parisian listeners, or even just the lovers of Paris out there, think should have made the cut. Please let me know if I'm missing any hidden gems, and what things do I have to do next time I'm in Paris. You can email us your suggestions to the same email address, podcast@service95.com, and we might feature a few of your lists on our social media in the weeks ahead. Don't forget to link us to your Instagram page so that we can tag you if we choose yours. And speaking of social media, follow along on Instagram for some exclusive lists and content. We're at Service95. We'll be back next week with our next special guest and one of my favorite authors, Lisa Tadeo, whose 2019 best-selling book, Three Women, is always at the top of my list for nonfiction whenever anyone asks for my recommendations. And finally, I know I've asked a lot from you guys, but if you've enjoyed the first episode of Dua Lipa at Your Service, I'd be really grateful if you could leave us a nice 5-star review, because it will help other people discover our new podcast. Sending you all lots of love, stay safe, and I'll see you next week. Mwah.